Welcome to The Whole View. I'm Stacey Toth of RealEverything.com. I'm all about loving the skin you're in and being healthy inside and out.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I believe that scientific literacy is the key to improving public health.
Welcome back to The Whole View, episode 402, not 42.
Although 42 would be the answer to the life, universe, and everything. It's one of my favorite numbers.
You're full of punny jokes today.
I'm just a nerd in every respect is really what it boils down to.
And already the show has taken a downturn. I am excited today, Sarah, we get to share your big news with our listeners. I have known about this news for a long time, and I'm literally like moving my fingers with anticipation as I say this. I'm like so excited for you. I feel like I'm getting a new niece. That's what it feels like.
You really are. You're absolutely getting a niece. My mother is also getting a granddaughter. Why that did not work out at all.
Well, it's good that you cut it off at the pass, because then I realized that we like might be insinuating something different for people, and I was like, oh, we better not take this too far.
So we're actually pre-recording this because on our normal recording day next week, I intend to be completely overwhelmed, not sure what hit me or what I was thinking with a brand new puppy.
I can tell you from personal experience that puppies are pretty great.
I grew up with dogs and cats and turtles and parakeets and a rabbit and gerbils and mice and guinea pig and fish. And we were just pretty much like they were all rescues. We were like the home. My mom, before she became a teacher, was a social worker. And she worked in a group home. And so there were a lot of pets that were not being particularly well looked after that then made their way into our home. And so we were just this, you know, we grew up in this teeny tiny little 700 square foot house, family of five. And we still just had like one of everything, two cats. For a while, we had three cats, actually. I've always sort of rejected the idea that I have to be either a cat person or a dog person because I really love both. And I just think that they're pets that you get something different out of. Like, I just think that they enrich your life in a different way. And as an adult, I've had cats, I guess I'm on number three and number four of my own cats as an adult. And I've wanted a dog forever. And I've really just been waiting for the right time because I knew that my husband was the opposite. So he grew up with no pets, and dogs are something that he doesn't have a whole lot of comfort with. And my kids are both kids who have been a little bit skittish around dogs traditionally. So I've known that because of that, for them to be comfortable dog owners, it was really important for us to get a puppy. And so I've been waiting for a time in my life where I feel like we can have a puppy. And that, you know, puppies are a ton of work, and it's really important to put in that work for their first year in order to have a really nice dog. And so I've just been waiting for a long enough break from travel to be able to commit to a puppy. And when my health crashed last fall after my father's heart attack, and I ended up canceling all of my 2020 travel, it was one of the first things Mira said was like, well, Mom, now we can finally get a dog. And I looked at her, and this was, I think early October, I looked at her and was like, you're right. And so I basically, this has been in the works since then. I have been researching dog breed characteristics as a hobby for a very, very long time. We're getting a Portuguese water dog, and that's the breed that I've wanted for, oh gosh, at least 5-6 years. I've decided that's absolutely the breed that matches my family's needs the best. But when she said that, and I just said, you're right. Let's do it. Let's pull a trigger and start doing that. The first place I started was, let's go back to the drawing board and really make sure, you've met me, Stacey, so you know that I'm not a person who does anything without thorough research.
Not just me. I think our listeners know you.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was, there's a lot, I think, that goes into the, a dog is a lot more daily work than most other kinds of pets. And, the Portuguese water dogs will live to be about 15 years old. So it's a fairly long commitment. And so the first thing I did when Mira made me realize that here was the window that I've been waiting for years, I went back and I was like, okay, like, let's really make sure that this is the breed of dog that I want, that's going to really fit this fairly specific list, looking at what was going to be the right fit, not just for me, but for my family, and really, knowing that I had a more lengthy criteria that had to be met because of the, the four of us all having something slightly different. So we're really looking for, especially because at the time that I started this whole process, I was still dealing with depression and anxiety after my father's heart attack. That was, I was not just having an autoimmune flare, but I was having really intense mental health challenges last fall. And so I knew that also my kids have some mild anxiety challenges that I try to be very proactive with. And my husband also has anxiety and, sees a therapist, and, he's very proactive as well. But knowing that there's probably a genetic link there for all of us, and we're all people who, my kids will, as adults, will have to be very proactive to support mental health, looking for a very social, cuddly, highly interactive, like a Velcro dog type dog was really important to me. So I really wanted a breed that was the type of dog who just wants to be in the middle of everything all the time and wants to just hang out and cuddle, who is a big dog who thinks they're a lap dog. And that was one of the things I was looking for. But also, we're a very active family. We like to go for walks. We like to go for hikes. Camping is our favorite hobby. And I wanted a dog that would also get me out of the house more than just going to the gym 4 times a week, so that I would be increasing my activity. So looking for a breed that needed a lot of activity was on my checklist. And then the other piece that I was looking for was a very smart, highly trainable dog. And so Portuguese water dogs check all of those boxes. They are, they can learn like 300 different commands, which is more than I can even think of different things to train a dog. They need physical exercise as well as mental exercise every day, but they are completely class clown, goofy, but also super cuddly and, interactive social dogs. They're a breed that, make excellent therapy dogs, but they're also really great dog sports dogs. And one of the things that I have not ruled out is, competitive agility, with my dog. That just looks like a thing I would love. And then the other thing that was, really important for us was a hypoallergenic breed because of the allergies in our families. So, we don't know if the kids are allergic, but this kind of helps us get around that. So they're also a breed with hair instead of fur. And so, yeah, they were, I've known for a long time that this was, the breed I wanted. But even, last October, I was like, okay, we're going to start researching this. We're going to have conversations about what everybody in my family expects. life with a dog to be like. And then we're gonna have some conversations about what life with a dog is really like. And really just sort of look at, you know, what are our needs and what is the best route for us as a family to find the right dog for us. And so that was the beginning. And then once I had decided that a Portuguese water dog was the perfect mix of temperament and, you know, activity and all of the things that we were looking for, like really every single checkbox. Then it was a question of researching responsible and reputable breeders and really doing a ton of research to find somebody who really was active in AKC and the Portuguese Water Dog Club, who cares about, you know, improving the health of the breed with each generation, who both shows their dogs but also lives with them as pets, who health tests and genetic screens before breeding and temperament tests their dogs and carefully places every puppy. Like, this is one of the things I was really looking for, was a breeder who doesn't let me pick which dog and picks for me. And who is somebody who also maintains a relationship with all of the owners of the dogs that they've bred. And, I spent a lot of time finding that person. So they were interviewing me and I was interviewing them. There was a lengthy application, but, after talking with several breeders, I found a really synergistic fit just a couple hours down the road. And I'm really, really excited because, we're going to be picking up our wee girl. She's going to be, not quite 9 weeks old when we pick her up, this weekend. And, yeah. And then we're going to have a whole new family member for everyone.
A whole new world.
So much.
I've sang that song so often the last year. I just want to say, I feel like, a lot of your excitement is tempered by needing to talk about the breeder position. So I'm just going to address the elephant in the room as someone who also has a quote unquote purebred dog. As we are all individual in our health and lifestyle needs, we are also very individual in our pet needs. And I will say from personal experience, my family has rescued probably about 20 animals between the dogs that I had when I was younger to the different cats that we've had over the years to the three-legged lizard that we rescued. Like, mm-hmm. I, when I was pregnant with Wesley, we adopted a dog. And unfortunately, the way that this often goes is it was sight unseen. It was, you know, from a West Virginia impound that was going to be putting dogs down. And it was like, once it was in our possession, like once we said, okay, we'll adopt a dog, it was in our possession and that was it. There was no like getting to know the dog kind of thing. And turns out it was blind or not blind, it was deaf. And having two toddlers and being pregnant, having a dog that is very high energy because it was like 6 months, who cannot understand commands because they are deaf, was very impossible. And we did the thing where we fostered the dog until we could find a better fit. And it was about 6 months of being with that dog who my children then became scared of because it would lovingly knock them over, but they didn't understand that. And the dog didn't understand and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so having gone through that, when I would talk about a dog with Matt, it was like, no, like the answer was no, because our experience had been something that did not work for us. And in fact, was very stressful in our lives at a time that was already stressful. And it wasn't until our kids brought a presentation forward. I don't know if you remember me talking about this when we got Penny, but they put a PowerPoint presentation together talking about, the different temperaments of dogs and why they specifically had selected three that they felt would be a good fit for our family. And it was Matt and I doing further research of that presentation that we came to determine that an emotional support therapy animal was actually a really good idea for our family. And he was open to it once looking at the research of that. Now, I can't say that we couldn't have found something in another dog. You can't predict whatever, but what I can tell you is that in doing research, in finding a breeder who specialized in emotional support therapy animals, and I've already had people ask, that breeder is actually no longer doing that. Like the mom has had the number of litters that she feels comfortable having, and she's no longer moving forward with breeding. So you can't ask me. But in finding someone who specifically specialized in that, I mean, her son had emotional needs that were met by the type of dog we have, a Boston Terrier. And so she felt compelled to share that with others and did selective smart breeding like you were talking about. So I will say that I have never had a dog that I have bonded with and that has made such a difference in my life, except the puppy that my mom got that was a Newfoundland, which is very similar to a Portuguese water dog.
Yeah, they look very similar.
They also have a lot of the same temperaments and all of that kind of stuff. And we got that dog from the pound as a puppy. We had no idea that it was a Newfoundland. It was... our vet estimated a purebred, and it was very not well behaved. And we think someone just dropped it off at the shelter because they couldn't deal with it. But we loved that dog. We raised it from a puppy, and we had like a super bond with that dog. And again, with Penny, because we got her when she was weeks old. And I think that there is a difference in a special needs home, which is what we have. Let me be very clear. We, like you, have depression, anxiety. We have ADD, ADHD. Like there's all kinds of things in our family. And an animal, whether it's a cat, whether it's, I don't know, whatever your passion is. For a while, it was a three-legged lizard for me. whenever your bonded animal is, has a lot of scientific benefits that we are going to talk a little bit about. But before we do that, I wanted to put out there that this is not an advertisement for go to the store and get a puppy mill puppy. In no scenario is that good for anybody, right? Like there's, my kids fell in love with a puppy in a pet store in New York City, and Matt and I were both like, absolutely not. Like, no, there's absolutely no way. But we will allow you to do research and present it to us, and then we can make smart choices about what we want to do. But that said, I don't want to tell anybody what they should or should not do, or the choices that you made, or maybe you did buy a puppy from a pet store, not understanding what you were doing, yeah, but now you love that dog and you know, you didn't intend to support a negative industry. That, like, there's no guilt or shame or whatever associated with that. Just like lifestyle and health that we talk about, looking back and having those kinds of emotions is never productive. What we can do is say, okay, now I'm educated. I'm going to make the best choices that I can with the knowledge that I have. And I'm going to be educated and help others be educated. And so I don't want people to feel like we're coming here and being like, get a purebred puppy, or someone feeling like if they didn't or whatever, like there's no yeah, sentiment about that. But I do think that it's important that you understand the kind of animal that you're getting, especially if you have a high needs home. And that is the lesson that we learned when I was pregnant and we tried to adopt a puppy that we ended up having to foster until we could find a better suited family for that puppy, because what you don't want to do is have an animal that's been through difficult times. I mean, if you're adopting an animal from any place, like they've had difficult times, like imagine that, you know, the trauma that they've been through to get to where they are. And then to not be a stable home environment for them is just going to make their behavior even more exaggerated. So just being mindful of what you're getting into is the only thing that I will say. And that encompasses so many different perspectives, but it is important to understand that there are animals that have different temperaments based on both genetics as well as how they've been raised. And it can be such a fantastically wonderful experience. I never would have imagined that us getting a dog could have gone as well as it has. Like I couldn't even imagine it could go half as well as it has, frankly. And she is, our dog Penny is a Boston Terrier about 2 years old. almost years old, and has just been magic for our family. Like, I saw an immediate change in the depression and anxiety in one of our children who had slash has it, and Matt. Matt is very much a physical touch person, and I am not a physical touch person, and it's one of the strains on our relationship is that I don't like being hugged. I don't like being spooned and snuggled, and I need personal space, but a dog loves it. And so it fulfills an emotional need for him that wasn't being met. And we all have emotional needs that need to be met, and a pet might be that for you.
There were a couple of articles that I read from the American Kennel Club, the AKC, and we'll put links in the show notes to these articles because they were very helpful for me to understand a lot of the myths around purebred dogs and feel comfortable going in that direction, as well, though, as empowering. One of the articles we'll put a link into it. It gives you what to look for in a rescue organization, as well as what to look for in a breeder. Because that was, I mean, the first place that I had to start once I decided that I wanted to go this route was to, like, figure out what do I need to know, right? So, like, okay, now I know about the dog and the temperament and the characteristics that I'm looking for, and how this is going to fit into our family. But now I need to know, like, now how do I find the right exact dog, like, how am I going to do that piece? And so I found these articles really, really helpful. And like you, Stacey, you know, I think every other animal I've ever owned has been a rescue, and this is the first time that I'm not. And this really was a very, very carefully thought out decision made with my family, with all of our diverse needs in mind. So I want to, I want to not make a statement on which way is better. I think the important piece here is that puppy mill in between, between a responsible breeder and a rescue. It's that puppy mill in between that if you are looking for a dog now, it's really important to be aware of just how inhumane that industry is and how problematic it is, and avoid that awful in between. And again, if you, Stacey, you said it, but I'm going to say it again. If you did get a dog from a pet store and you just fell in love with how cute it was and you got it on impulse without researching, like, you, that's not something to feel guilty of. It's just something to be aware of for next time, that there's really these two very ethical ways to go about this. And it's about finding the right fit for you as an individual. I think it's also worth noting before we get into the sciences on the sort of benefits of pet ownership that were one of, you know, the main drivers for us to actually make this decision was right now with COVID-19 and shutdowns, there are a lot of animals looking for foster homes. And so even if you think that you can't continue pet ownership after life returns to normal, that there are some organizations that are looking for temporary homes for their pets, where they'll actually be, you know, loved and taken care of and have human interaction. And so again, we'll link to these AKC articles that give you, lists of things to look for in the research. Cause I think it's better to give you the, knowledge to go find a local group near you than it is to start calling out groups all over the country. There's tons of them, that are, ethical rescues and all of that great stuff. So definitely check out the show notes on this episode and get those links to those AKC articles.
I'm excited about the science because I know what it's done for our family, and I don't think that people understand. Like, I feel like I had one of those awakening moments where, you know how before you started paleo and someone would say to you, like, that food makes a difference in the way that you feel? you were kind of blind to it. And you're like, yeah, sure. You know, what I eat can affect my allergies, whatever, you know, like rolling your eyes. And now that you see the light and you're like, how did I ever not see that? Like, you know, there's no way to unsee it. It's the same for me as pet ownership, like puppy dog ownership. Like, I've had pets my whole life. I actually grew up with dogs, but they were never my dogs. And they were always like the one that I was talking about that we got when it was a puppy, it was bonded to my mom. And I adored that dog. It was the best dog we ever had. But it was bonded to my mom. And so like, I never had the kind of relationship that we have with our dog right now. And every single one of our family members, although she is bonded to me, benefits from her from a mental health perspective. And so I'm like talking about her and she's scratching on the door trying to get in. She's so sad. She's like, but it's the 2 hours a week we don't hang out, Mom. And I'm excited for you to share the science of why that is and how that is for hopefully an aha moment for people, the way that we had with food.
Yeah. So actually what's really interesting about the science on pet ownership and the benefits of pet ownership is in many ways, it doesn't matter what kind of pet you have. There is definitely some unique benefits to owning a dog. But a lot of the different sort of mental health benefits of pet ownership actually is what's important is the bond with the animal, not necessarily what type of animal it is. So you could have that same close bond with a bird or a roach or a cat or
a three-legged lizard,
a three-legged lizard or a little pig, or I'm trying to think of what other types of house pets you might have. But really what matters is the bond and the relationship with the animal. Given there are some unique benefits to dogs that we don't necessarily get from other animals. But there's been a huge amount of studies. I actually grabbed some research as I was preparing this episode that I had done for the section on pet ownership and paleo principles. And then I went to a PubMed and was like, okay, it's like, what's new? Like what, you know, since I wrote this book, right? It's been a couple years already. What else is there that I can add to this? And I was shocked how many studies there were just in the last couple years that are starting to look at, teasing out the mechanisms behind like what's responsible for these benefits. And it's really interesting because it seems to be benefiting our health from a variety of different points. So there's the connection point. We know that owning a companion animal reduces stress and depression, and that is through impacts directly on the HPA axis and cortisol, as well as causing the release of oxytocin, which is the love hormone, but it is the hormone that you would release when you hugged or cuddled another person that increases, right? That hormone actually drives a lot of the neurological connection, right? So it drives the sense of trust and, you know, like all of the social connection that we have with another human. It's the same hormone being released when we are, you know, hanging out with our pet. So, that is a large part of the science on this, is that, a lot of science that has been done, and it's been done in children and adults and, elderly living by themselves, showing that a pet can actually provide connection and reduce the sense of isolation. And feeling isolated is a health risk factor. Like there are studies that actually want to put social isolation at the same level of risk as being obese, inactive, and being a smoker. And so knowing that a pet can take that place, I think is really, really empowering information. And then there's been this whole collection of really fascinating research papers that have shown like more granular impacts. So companion animals can reduce blood pressure. They can reduce your cholesterol and your triglycerides. They've been shown to have pretty, like a lot of the cardiovascular disease research, in part because you can quantify risk factors, but then you can also quantify disease activity pretty easily. A lot of the research has been done in the context of cardiovascular disease. It also makes sense because cardiovascular disease is directly linked with stress. So if you've got a companion animal that's going to reduce your stress, you can measure that as well. But it's been shown having a pet improves cardiovascular disease outcomes. There was even one study showing a reduced risk of death within the first year after an acute myocardial infarction for dog owners compared to people who didn't own dogs, which was kind of an amazing study to be able to show that kind of a difference. It reduces both, you know, heart attacks and strokes. It can reduce allergies. It can reduce obesity. It can improve rheumatoid arthritis and improve osteoporosis. It can benefit ADHD and autism. There's just like huge range of different benefits. And so the studies that have tried to okay, we can measure all of these different benefits of having an animal, you know, having this bond with a pet. What is the actual science? Like, what is behind this? So oxytocin is definitely one of the mechanisms, and the direct interaction with the HPA axis and neurotransmitters is another mechanism. But also with dogs especially, dog owners are more likely to have healthy habits. And that's probably because a dog in general, like most breeds of dog, and crossbreeds need to be walked every day. And so the part where you're getting outside to take your dog to go potty, you might be playing fetch with them. You might be taking them for a walk. You might be taking them from a rigorous activity. So that's actually been quantified in studies that basically shows to compare to any other kind of pet. If you own a dog, you are far more likely to be physically active. And what's really interesting is you're far more likely to have a healthy diet. And that probably relates to the, there's a very strong interaction between lifestyle and cravings and appetite regulation. And so physical activity helps regulate appetite and cravings. Getting enough sleep helps regulate appetite and cravings and managing stress. And then physical activity helps improve sleep quality and helps manage stress. So if you can put one of those pieces in place, and with dog ownership, it's almost certainly physical activity is being the thing that dog ownership is driving. It's translating to all of these different aspects, lifestyle aspects, as well as diet, and helping to dial those in. So a lot of the benefits of dog ownership is going to come out of increased physical activity. But then what's really cool is that there's all of these additional studies showing that there's benefits beyond that. So where you actually start controlling for diet and lifestyle and physical activity and start showing that there's other benefits. And those are the ones that are mediated through the stress axis, through oxytocin, through neurotransmitters. And there's been a variety of studies that have shown that having any kind of companion animal, and here's where it's not so dog specific, having any kind of companion animal has been shown to reduce depression, reduce anxiety, reduce feelings of social isolation. And we're seeing it mediated through hormones by having measurably higher oxytocin, lower cortisol, better regulated neurotransmitters like dopamine. And actually, this one was a really interesting one. So measurably lower alpha amylase levels, which is a salivary digestive enzyme that helps to break down sugars and starch, which actually would imply that and this is probably mediated through the stress axis, but it actually implies a healthier blood sugar response through the sort of more drawn out digestion and absorption of carbohydrates that would then help to translate to other health benefits, which is very, very cool.
I am like the emoji where the brain is coming off of the top. Like that's what's happening to me right now. I does not surprise me at all about oxytocin. I always think of that hormone. I know this is a complete side tangent, but when I used to be a LHA league leader, is that was the hormone that I would explain to people is like your happy hormones of when you're breastfeeding a baby and you just kind of like fall in love with that baby and it can do no wrong and you're just like, oh, I'm in love with you. And so, like you said, it's the love hormone, but not from my perspective. I've never associated it with like romance. I've associated it with like connection, if that makes sense. And so for you to say that it increases oxytocin, I'm like, oh, 100%. I like, I'm on board. Penny is totally my nursling. Like, I get it.
So also oxytocin directly leads into the immune system. And so increasing oxytocin actually is anti-inflammatory. So there's this whole other side. Like, it's not just that oxytocin makes you feel happy. It's actually has this direct impact on immune regulation that can reduce risk for disease as well.
I love it.
So there have been some really interesting studies along this vein of sort of looking at the benefits of pet ownership through the lens of the stress response, or through the lens of neurotransmitters, or like, for example, like hormonal response. And so there was one study done in 2002 that I particularly enjoyed reading, that so what they did was they did this like stress test, and they measured, they're literally like getting people to do math in their head while feeling cold. And then they were measuring how their heart reacted, right? So they were like measuring things like heart rate and blood pressure in response to having to do math in your head when you're cold, which is a really interesting study design. And they,
I'm over here like, what, people don't enjoy just doing math for fun? Like, you say that to me and I'm like, I like being cold. I like math. I'm down. I'm ready for this study.
Just all right. So for you, I have to just ramp it up to vector calculus then. So they took 240 married couples, half of whom owned a pet and the other half didn't. And then they basically mix and matched. So they would have these people do this stress test in the presence of their pet, in the presence of their spouse, or then in the non-pet owners, the substitute for a pet would be a friend. So a friend, spouse, or a pet. And guess which way made the least amount of stress?
Oh, for sure, a pet. I mean, right. Because you don't want your friend or your spouse judging your ability to do math in the cold.
Yeah, definitely. I think the unconditional love is a major piece of this puzzle, where you know your pets love you because you feed them, and that's something I think, you know, you worry with humans about judgment.
Unless you feed them.
unless you feed them.
Because I feel like
can be judgy judgment, though.
Yes, I feel like your children, while all you're doing is feeding them, just love you unconditionally. And it's once you start like having interaction with them that the judgment starts.
It's once you make them do their homework, that's when things start to unravel. Mm-hmm. But I thought rooms, that was really interesting, because they're actually able to measure the like cardiac reactivity to stress in these patients, and showed that the lowest reactivity was among pet owners in the presence of their pet. So they didn't have the same, it wasn't like having a pet made you overall like have a better stress response. Because if you were a pet owner, but you were in the presence of your spouse, you didn't have as good a stress response as if you were a pet owner in the presence of your pet. It's pretty great.
Makes sense to me. This is, I'm going to advocate for recording with Penny in the room from now on. And I'm going to tell you it's because I need to think more clearly. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to point back to the study and you're going to say, but Stacey, she snores so loudly.
I like to think of her snoring as dog purring. So there have been a bunch of other studies that have looked at this in different ways. There was a really good study that just looked at dopamine, endorphin, and cortisol in people just spending 30 minutes interacting with the dog. So they were petting and playing with the dog. It was not their dog, so it wasn't necessarily looking at pet ownership, just looking at spending time with the dog, and showed that in just 30 minutes of hanging out with the dog, dopamine was increased. That's the main neurotransmitter responsible for the reward. Endorphin, which is our happy feeling hormones that we get when things feel good, right? And then decreased levels of cortisol, so showing a lower stress response just in 30 minutes. And there's actually been other studies that have looked at this as well. There was one study that found a similar level effect in the stress axis in healthcare workers after only 5 minutes of petting a dog.
I'm curious if you found information about people who are uncomfortable with dogs. Like you said, in Matt's side of the family, and I think you said with your daughters, there's like a little bit of anxiety around dogs based on a prior experience. And I know, like with my older two boys that remembered the older dog that we had, they were also very much like, okay, now we need to train Penny as soon as we get her, like no jumping. Like they, you know, they remembered all that stuff because they remembered how they felt with that other dog and they didn't want other children to feel that way. Or do you know what I mean? And so I'm curious, A, what information is out there? And B, I'm assuming it does not have the same positive response if you're feeling anxiety and stress about the animal. Like, is there something that can be done or mitigated in some sort of way?
So definitely that falls under like a couple of different banners. So like one is generally with pet ownership, like you tend to see that sort of nervousness with people who don't own a pet, right? So like that's one of the reasons why we're getting a puppy, why I put literally hundreds of hours into the research, not to mention all of the positive dog training videos I've watched on YouTube. Hundreds of hours, hundreds, almost like
you could have kept that to yourself. I didn't throw you under the bus on that.
But you know what? So the funny thing too is, as a total aside, David, my husband, says, "Well, do they spell it positive PAW?"
I said
no, and he's like, "Well, then it's wrong because he thinks it should be positive."
I just totally facepalmed at how bad that joke is.
I know the dogs abound in this household, but you know we all love a pun, so it works out. But that's, I mean, for us personally, that's one of the factors that sort of went into this decision was my husband and daughter's unease around dogs. Like they're all in, they want this dog, but the reason why they're all in is because of the amount of research that I've done and because we're getting a puppy and because they know what to expect and they've FaceTimed with the puppies and with the breeder. And it's just been like, it's been the whole process that has made them so excited and bought in. And it's not something that I necessarily could have reproduced in other ways. So part of it is that, and that's where the like bond, the studies have basically shown that feeling a bond with the pet is required for the benefits. And so the feeling unease around a pet would fall under the like not feeling bonded with that pet. I don't think it would be possible. I have a hard time imagining feeling uneasy around a pet and also feeling really bonded with them. Like those don't seem compatible. But there was a study done in children that was looking at perceived stress and then their actual cortisol stress response. And it, interestingly, I think this kind of answers the question a little bit. So when the children initiated petting of the dog, while they were experiencing a stressor with their pet presence, it lowered their perceived stress as well as their physiological stress. So it lowered their cortisol response. But if the dog was the, like was doing what they were called proximity seeking behavior, which basically means the dog was like, play with me, cuddle with me, cuddle with me. Cause dogs do that. The effect was not as pronounced. So when it was child initiated, super benefit. When it was dog initiated, not as much benefit. So I think that probably of all the scientific studies I've seen, that's probably the closest to really getting at that question of like if you feel nervous around a dog, do you get the same benefit? And the answer is yeah, probably not.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but I will say my own personal experience, it's not impossible to overcome. Matt really did not like dogs, kind of like he didn't like fish or vegetables when I met him. And eventually with enough exposure and comfort and positive experience, he came to appreciate vegetables and fish and dogs. But he had to, like you said, bond with an animal that didn't make him feel uncomfortable. And it just so happened that his brother, who has a wonderful dog, stayed with us for a while. And it was shortly thereafter that the kids were petitioning after his brother moved out and we no longer had a dog in the house that they were like, hey, remember that cute fuzzy thing that we all liked? Let's get another one. and then he was comfortable and open to it, but it was, you know, he'd had a number of bad experiences and was a little bit, you know, like anxious is not an adequate word to describe how he felt about dogs when I met him. And so it can be overcome, but not if the person doesn't want to work on it, has been my experience, right? Like you have to be willing to be open to that relationship with the dog in order to make the bond and let go of the fear or the anxiety or whatever it is.
Also a good time to just throw out that like a lot of the mental health benefits are any pet. So if you're somebody who doesn't want a dog for whatever reason, I know my mom had a rescue who had a dog rescue who had mental health issues his whole life. And he was not a safe dog for my family to be around. And I think that's one of the reasons why my kids have nervousness around dogs is such early memories of this particular dog. So if that's something that you're not willing to go there, or you don't have a lifestyle that would accommodate a dog, maybe you work really long days, right? There's lots of other reasons why a dog might not be a good fit. These benefits, the mental health benefits and the benefits to, you know, cortisol and dopamine and endorphins and oxytocin are ones that are much more just about the bond with a pet. So maybe a cat or a parakeet.
And I will say, you never know about a particular animal, kind of like you don't know about a human. Like you said, like that dog that had issues, it could have been genetic. It could have been lifestyle. It isn't necessarily breed specific. I think there's a lot of fear around certain types of breeds. And, or like if you're rescuing an animal, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to have issues. There are so many happy, healthy, well-adjusted dogs who are adopted into families. I know two of my family of the women that I work with have adopted dogs during this pandemic, and they have acclimated and adjusted and been wonderful members of their family in a very short amount of time. But I do want to put out there that like, animals are unique individuals with their own sets of emotions and thought processes, not exactly like humans, but it's another living, breathing animal that has had life experiences that you don't know that might be triggered by some sort of event that you can't anticipate. So when I know people who have had experiences who are afraid of animals, it's unfortunate because I want to say like, that's that thing. That's not like dogs in general, right? Like it was that particular creature that had whatever incident or whatever experience. And it's not like, you know, how many experiences have we had where humans have been jerks?
I was gonna say it's almost as though like not all humans are good humans. It's kind of like that.
Yep, kind of like it. So before we wrap up, are you telling people what your dog's name is? Is this like a situation like you're waiting to debut the animal in your home before you release the name or what?
So by the time this podcast goes live, we will have had the dog in our house for a few days. So no, we have completely settled on a name. We've had, due to COVID-19, we've been getting to know the dogs over FaceTime, which has definitely been a unique way to go about it. But we have a really good sense of her personality, and so does the breeder. And we have decided to name her Soka. She is named after Padawan Ahsoka Tano. And I'm just really hoping right now that Matt interjects and edits himself into this episode with a lengthy explanation of who Padawan Ahsoka Tano is from the Star Wars universe.
Sarah's actually going to give a pretty good explanation of who Ahsoka Tano is, but since you wanted me to explain it, I will. Ahsoka Tano is a character created for Star Wars The Clone Wars, the computer-generated animated series that was a continuation of Star Wars that Disney put out on their channel a little while ago and is actually ending very soon. She is a Padawan. She kind of has a look that's very similar to Princess Mononoke from the Studio Ghibli movie. She has the face paint. She kind of has like little cat ears and two braids that come down. So she is a very popular character for people who are fans of that show. And specifically, her nickname is Snips, given to her by Anakin Skywalker, which is why Sarah is going to be calling her that when she's in trouble, just like Anakin does.
But just in case he doesn't, she is one. I mean, she's my favorite female character from the Star Wars entire canon Star Wars universe. She is Anakin Skywalker's Padawan learner from Star Wars, The Clone Wars animated series, which takes place in the timeline between the movies, episode 2 and 3. And she's amazing. She makes an appearance in Rebels, and she is rumored to be cast by Rosario Dawson and show up in the next season of The Mandalorian and maybe even get her own Disney Plus show. So very, very excited about that. And then we've basically shortened it to Soka, which is also the Japanese equivalent of okay. Okay. Like and all the different ways that you would use the word okay. Like, I get it. Sure, let's go, right? Like, all of those different ways that you would use the word okay that just, to me, like, encapsulates a dog's personality, which was also a nod to my mom has had her last couple of animals have both been named. Her last dog was Kato, which is Japanese for dog, and her last cat was Neko, which is Japanese for cat. So it was a bit of a nod to those animals. And she suits the name. So I don't, you know, there's always that caveat of when we actually get her in our house that it's totally possible we'll record next week and I'll be like, yeah, no, we changed it. But at this point, I think we have picked the absolute nerdiest name possible, short of like Gandalf Sky Potter the Third. So
I'm dead. I hope someone names their next animal. What'd you say? Gandalf Sky Potter?
Gandalf Sky Potter the Third.
Oh my gosh.
Which was actually under consideration for a while, which is why I had it in my head.
I can't even, I like literally can't talk right now. My face is frozen from laughter. Like, I'm both shocked and not at all surprised.
No, it was basically a, what's the nerdiest name we could think of? And because we're all like Lord of the Rings fans here and Star Wars fans and Harry Potter fans, the only thing it was missing was like an MCU character in there. So yeah. No, but I always really loved this piece of like finding the right name for the animal. Like, what is your name? Like, if only you could just tell me what your name is, and now I just have to guess and figure it out. And yeah, she really suits Soka. And deep cut on the Star Wars nerd reference, we will probably call her Snips when she's naughty.
Yeah, I don't get that, but Matt can explain it. I do like the name. And the good news for you is that when introducing her to normal people, they will not be so off-put as they could be with Gandalf Skypotter the Third, which is very clear what your intention is.
It's also a lot to say.
I literally have tears rolling down my eyes. I can't. I'm like, I literally cannot.
Come here, Gandalf Skypotter the Third. Come here. Come here, Gandalf Skypotter the Third. No, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Too many syllables.
Okay, with tears in my eyes, I've got to wrap this up because I need to go tell someone what I've just heard. I need to like share this because I'm not going to be able to talk about it on social media. I'm like literally, tears are rolling down my eyes in a good way. So thank you for that. Thank you, listeners, for joining in. And Sarah, I'm excited for you to welcome the newest member of your family. As someone who has recently had a dog come into our family, and I'm sure I speak for all dog owner listeners, you're in for quite a treat. I know that puppies are a lot of work, but just like a newborn baby, it is so worth it. And honestly, not as hard as I thought. Like, I think if you go into it thinking it's going to be hard, it's not as bad as if you're like, well, it's just a dog. How hard could it be?
My feeling is, I realize it's going to be a lot of work, but also like not as much as a baby, right? Right? I mean, not as much as a baby.
A baby wears a diaper, so that makes it easier. You'll be fine. Everything will be fine, and it'll all work out. And when we talk to you next, it'll be like a time warp, and you can tell us all the lovely things about your dog. I know that we have some follow-up questions, both that I have wanted to ask you or have asked you, that we've had offline discussions about, that we can talk more about as you become a dog owner, and we can explore things like ideal food and different kinds of things. You listeners, if you have questions about pet ownership, now would be the time to submit those questions, because Sarah will be much more likely to answer them for you now.
So true. Because every question will be like, wait, I didn't think of that. I need to research that for 40 hours.
Totally.
That's absolutely what's going to happen. So I have to get it right. You only have one shot. Got to get it right.
Yes. So if you have any questions, put them in the hopper. Again, we have contact forms in our blogs, thepaleomom.com, realeverything.com. And if you've enjoyed this show or any of our shows, we would just so appreciate you leaving a review and sharing it with friends and family.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Thank you for being part of this awesome community. We know that we would be besties if only you could chime in.
Super besties. The best way to stay in touch with us is to engage on our social media, subscribe to our newsletters, and share this podcast with others.
Thank you for sharing. We love your reviews in iTunes, Stitcher, or however you listen. It is a live thing. I am literally live with Sarah recording a podcast right now. Hi, Penny. You need to leave. Wesley, are you going to take the dog? Do you want to say hi, Penny?
I want to say hi. Let's hear some snuffles. Is that a dog purr?
Yep, because I'm holding her. She's happy. She would stay in my arms 24/7 if she could.
I was distracted. I was eating dried kiwi. It's like my new favorite thing. And I was like, oh, wait, it's lunchtime. I got to shove some calories into my face. And I was just distracted in dried kiwi land. Pretty much all that happened.
I'm going to share a photo on Instagram of the bucket of kale chips that is currently on my desk. But I can't eat them while we're talking because it's very crunchy.
Are they homemade or are they favorite?
They're homemade. I don't. So first of all, it's very hard to find them nightshade free. Second of all.
And like they're like nutritional yeast free too.
I don't have a problem with nutritional yeast, but because most of them are beet based. But they just crumple in the bags when you buy them, and they're so overpriced for just roasting some kale.